Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the Arizona Diamondbacks. I am Allison Footer from MLB.com, here with my partner in crime, Richard Justice from MLB.com. And we are going to talk about the Diamondbacks with longtime beat writer Steve Gilbert in just a minute. Richard, the season really could not have begun any more disastrously for the Arizona Diamondbacks. We saw that happen in Houston about 10 years ago, but it's a very rare thing where you see a team that just is expected to be pretty decent and just can't get off the ground. Things have kind of evened out a little bit, but what do you think when you look at this Diamondbacks roster and where they are in the season?
Well, you know what I think is, if you'd asked me on opening day, if you'd said, where are the Diamondbacks? I would have said, I can make a case for them winning the NL West. And you know, it started with Patrick Corbin getting hurt. Their top prospect, Archie Bradley, got hurt. And things just spun out of control. And I think sometimes you have a season where every bad thing that can happen does happen to you. And that's sort of the way I feel about the Diamondbacks now. Now there's been a change in management at the top of the baseball operations. Let's bring in our Diamondbacks beat writer, the guy who's covered the Diamondbacks from the beginning, Steve Gilbert. Steve, just talk about what we were talking about, that this is a season where there were high hopes. They'd invested some money, and they'd spent some money, and everything sort of blew up.
Yeah, it really did. You know, they raised the payroll to a record level, about $110 million on opening day, and they were really expecting to be competitive, if not for the NL West, and certainly for a wild card spot. It started just before the day before, actually, they left for Australia when Patrick Corbin tore his ulnar collateral ligament and needed Tommy John surgery. Then when they came back from Australia, David Hernandez, their top setup man, suffered a similar injury. They've also been without Mark Trumbo for a large part of the season. A.J. Pollock, who was actually hitting better than Paul Goldschmidt, if you can believe that, at the beginning of the year, then gets hit in the hand and fractures his hand. Even Bronson Arroyo, who's gone, you know, 20-plus years in his professional career without missing a start, you know, now needs Tommy John surgery. So it really has been one thing after another. I mean, injuries are part of it, and they're not going to make excuses, but they got off to a terrible start, and it just really too deep a hole for them to dig themselves out of.
The Bronson Arroyo news, that was really jarring. He sounded so dejected, which is understandable because it's a source of pride, I'm sure, for a pitcher to have never gone on the DL and really never missed a start. And losing him, I mean, there's still plenty of season left. So now that he's out and you have to account for many, many innings, he was good for about 200 every year. So where do they go from here to fill his spot?
Yeah, that's a great question, Allison, because, you know, when you got Corbin out and you've got Arroyo out and they traded Brandon McCarthy before the All-Star break. So you're looking at now they're going to try to take a look at some of their younger prospects. You know, Mike Bolsinger, who is a guy that's come up. This is the second time up in the big leagues this year. They want to see what they have with him. They're taking a look at a kid by the name of Chase Anderson, one of their top picks from a few years back. He's getting an extended look. I think once Archie Bradley gets back in the flow of things and proves that he's healthy and is able to, you know, master his changeup a little bit more, I think you'll see him in the second half. So I think you're going to start to see some of these younger pitchers like that come up and kind of get an audition so the team has an idea of what maybe they have going forward next year.
Hey, Steve, I take it that Tony La Russa was brought in to head the baseball operations above general manager Kevin Towers. I guess part of what he's been doing is just going around looking at the minor league teams, trying to assess where the Diamondbacks are in terms of talent. Is that your read on what Tony's been doing?
Yeah, it's really interesting, Richard. You know, he's talked about when he went to visit these different minor league affiliates that even more than the players, what he wanted to get a feel for was the managers and the coaches. He wanted to see what was being taught throughout the system. Again, trying to take more of a big picture view on things because that's kind of how he sees this unique job title of chief baseball officer. I don't know that anybody else in baseball has that title, so it's kind of a role he's creating. And I think one of the reasons why his partnership with Kevin Towers could end up working, you know, we obviously don't know at this point, is because Tony's kind of taken more of a big picture look and is not really interfering in the day-to-day kind of general managing duties, but is more kind of setting a tone for the overall organization.
Yeah, and you know, Steve, just another point about that is Tony knows the problems that come with being a big league manager, the challenges, I guess I should say. And I think he's going to be very sympathetic to Kirk Gibson. So I think all of us who are presuming that KT and Gibson will both be gone might be wrong. I mean, could you see a scenario where they both end up staying for 2015?
You know, when they first hired Tony, you're right, there was a lot of talk about, okay, he's going to want to bring in his own people. Is he going to wait till the All-Star break? Is he going to wait till the end of the year? Well, you know, when's he going to do it? And I think Tony, as you know him, is a very methodical person, and he's going through everything bit by bit. And if you listen to the comments that he's made to this point, you're right when you talk about he's going to be very understanding about Kirk Gibson, because he talks a lot about, you know, knowing what it's like to be a manager, knowing what it's like to have injuries, understanding the pressure that Gibson's under. And I think one of the things that he's been impressed with in talking with him since he took over is the fact that the team hasn't quit on Gibson. And I think that's something that goes a long way, obviously, with Tony and what he feels is leadership there. And also, he feels like there's things that he has to learn from Kevin Towers, because, you know, he's never experienced the day-to-day GM role. So I think there's a learning process there between the two of them. And you know, they're both kind of old-school baseball guys, and they like to talk baseball. And KT has said it's been a real pleasure to have Tony in his booth during games, swapping stories and just talking baseball.
That's a big change from kind of what we all thought was going to happen a couple months ago when this all went down. Have you noticed that Towers might be a little bit more relaxed about everything and feel better about things at this point than he did maybe when everything happened, and he sort of maybe looked a little bit like a deer in headlights at times?
Yeah, I think it kind of was a shock to him when, I think he knew that they were pondering changes, but I don't think he knew specifically what those changes were going to be until just before they were announced. I mean, like, that day, that morning that they were announced. So I think it took a little while for him to kind of understand, you know, what Tony was going to be looking for. And I think it's taken everybody a while to just kind of in the organization to kind of feel and see what Tony's kind of looking for and what he sees his role as being. So, again, I think it's something that here in the second half is going to play out, and we'll see at the end of the year. I would be surprised if Tony made a move with either position before the end of the year, and again, could conceivably not end up making moves with either or not with one of them.
Steve, I probably tend to oversell the optimism, but I look at the club and see next year, you know, a pretty good team. If Pollock's back, if Corbin Trumbo, let's say Archie Bradley's ready. With Tommy John, it's uncertain. Call Mentor's been pretty good. Chase Anderson's been competitive. Is there a scenario in your mind where you see the Diamondbacks being competitive in the National League West on opening day next year, or is that too optimistic? Are there too many other holes to fill?
Well, I think they see themselves in that way. I think they see this more as a retooling thing, and as we get closer to the trade deadline, you know, the moves that they make will be with the idea that maybe 2014 is unrealistic, obviously, but that 2015 is not. And if they save a few dollars here or there, whether it be a contract like an Aaron Hill or a Martin Prado, then that gives them more money to invest in the off season, because I think they feel like they still could use an extra pitcher or two. So maybe they'll look in the market, whether it's a trade or free agency, for something like that. But I think they feel like if they got some of these guys back healthy, Corbin, Hernandez, Trumbo, Daniel Hudson's another guy that I totally forgot about, but he's going through a second Tommy John rehab. So there are guys that they have that they feel like if they get healthy and then they can add a piece or two, that yes, they can be competitive next year. And I think that's a realistic scenario. I think it's, you know, it certainly will take some good fortune and a return to health for that to happen.
Sometimes in the small and medium markets, we don't get to see enough of the real superstars of the game if they happen to not be playing for a team that's on national TV a lot. And certainly Paul Goldschmidt is a super-duper star. So tell us a little bit about him. I mean, just the kind of guy he is. You know, how is he in the clubhouse? How is he with the leadership role? I saw somewhere recently that he was compared to Don Mattingly sort of on the field and at the same age. But, you know, besides the performance, what does he bring to the team?
He brings, Allison, a real consistency in his approach every day. What you see is kind of what you get with him, and I know we've all experienced guys that seem good in front of the camera or seem to have a good image, but off camera maybe a little more selfish than that. He really puts his teammates first. He really carries himself in a very humble way, doesn't like talking about himself. ask him to talk about himself, and it's pretty painful. Ask him to talk about a teammate, and he'll go on and on with all the positive virtues that are there. So I think there's younger players like A.J. Pollock, Chris Owings, they you can see how they kind of follow his lead and kind of, you know, see what he does and see the kind of consistent program that he's on every day during batting practice and in his early work. And I think that rubs off on them, and I think that's an invaluable part of what he brings in addition to his production on the field.
You know, Steve, I had a friend get fired over his assessment of Paul Goldschmidt before the 2009 draft. This guy was a 246 player taken, and his defense was, well, the guy went in the eighth round, so obviously a lot of people had the same opinion I did. What happened? Why do you think teams missed on Paul, and what was responsible for his transformation? Just his work ethic, his heart, all those things that are hard to measure, you think?
I think that's a huge part of it, Richard. I think that, you know, the fact that he is so – he just is like a sponge with information. It's amazing. If you talk to him, he'll point out that so-and-so mentioned this. And, you know, when I was coming up, I saw so-and-so do that. And it's just he's able to take that information and apply it maybe a little better than others. And you heard things about him when he was first coming up through the system that his bat might be a little slow. Defensively, he wasn't very good. And he just continued. I don't know what happened with the bat speed, because it certainly looks pretty good at the big league level. But defensively, he spent a lot of time working. You know, he talked to Mark Grace. He picked Lyle Overbay's brain. You know, Lyle Overbay was a pretty good defender in his day. And you could see him with early work constantly during spring training in his first big league camp when he was a non-roster invitee. So I think a lot of it is his ability to take in information and then also apply it, because I think a lot of people can listen, but sometimes it's harder for people to apply the wisdom that comes with experience.
I think it should be noted, Steve, that you are part of the dime breed of original MLB.com beat writers. You have covered the Arizona Diamondbacks from the very first day that MLB.com was covering teams. So is there like a have you ever gotten like a cake or anything like that?
I have not gotten a cake, Allison, but that's a great suggestion to run up the flagpole. Would you take care of that for me?
How has it changed? I mean, really, like, with the Internet, I mean, the way we used to have to, like, dial up and our computers would crash, like, every 20 minutes. I mean, it is kind of nice now. Things are sort of – you feel like it's more settled these days? It's easier to cover a team?
It's pretty unbelievable when you think about where we started out. I remember talking with you online late, and I'm talking, you know, 1, 2 in the morning – waiting for our stories to get posted, because we did it all ourselves that first year. We got the photos, cropped them, and put the cut lines on them. So it truly is amazing every time I call up MLB.com to see how far we've come.
Yeah, I think that we're all pretty lucky to be where we are. But
cool.
Anyway, thank you very much, Steve, for your time. And Steve Gilbert, the MLB.com beat writer for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Thanks a lot, Steve.